let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Neil Mitchell is a retired writer who has traveled extensively during his life and enjoys telling a good story. Born in Mississippi, he had concurrent careers as a Teamster and tax preparer. After acquiring degrees in political science and 3 years in the U.S. Army, finishing as a first lieutenant in the military police. His time at Fort Stewart, Georgia, serves as a basis for his fictional novel, A Stateside Tour of Duty. He won the prestigious William Faulkner Literary Competition novel category in late 2020 for Where is the Glory? And now from Neil Mitchell, his remarkable novel, Where There is Life, There's Always Hope, a sequel to It's a Wonderful Life. And master storyteller Neil Mitchell is our guest on This Week in America. Neil, welcome to the program. Great to have you with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I love the storytelling, the books that you have out there and are touching so many people. Big success at the LA Book Fest a while back. We'll talk about that during the course of the interview today. But let's start about this inspiration to write. It's sort of like what you finish your careers, Teamster, tax preparer, and then you got to live your lifelong dream of being a writer. Talk about being a writer.
Well, I'd always wanted to write, but we got married. My wife had a whole plethora of illnesses where she couldn't really work outside the home. So raising kids and working extensive hours, I really didn't have any time. But after I retired, I immediately started writing. And one of the, my book, Stateside Tour of Duty, as I started writing it, there's two junior officers fighting the system. And I'd originally began writing it when I was in the Army, but since junior officers fighting the system is a plot of MASH, I'm not a plagiarist, so I threw it in a drawer. So after I retired, I pulled it out. The writing was terrible, so I threw it away and started over again. And about 3 weeks later, I came home. My wife was reading it. She says, hey, how come I'm not in this book? I said, well, there's no reason for you to be. She says, hey, all this stuff happened to you. I was there. I want to be in the book. So I said, well, what do you want your character's name to be? She said, call her Samantha. So to chapter 3, Lieutenant Moultrie goes back to Phoenix, Arizona, marries his college girlfriend. So a couple of weeks later, she reads, says, hey, you can't write this. People will think that's me. I said, well, if you want to be in a book, you got to take what you get. So, but eventually, she got really excited about it. She says, I really like Sam. She's tough. She doesn't take any crap from anybody. Yeah, I'm good with it the way it's written. So, okay. It turned out, all was well, and was able to get the book published. And of course, she passed away a while back.
But, oh, sorry to hear that.
Yes. So at any rate, now I don't have anybody at home criticizing anything I write. So I can pretty much do what I want.
Or want to be characters in your book. I love how she decided she would like to be in the book and author's discretion, but you put her in and it becomes a hit character in the book. It's a remarkable story from Neil Mitchell. His website, by the way, very simple, neilmitchellmedia.com. Neil is N-E-I-L. We'll have that link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us, to get information there on that book. Let's talk a little bit about the writing process. What is that like for you? I'm always fascinated to talk with authors and see how they go about writing a book. What's it like for you? How do you approach writing? Do you set aside, for example, a certain time of day you like to write? Do you have an outline you work from? How do you begin the writing process?
Well, basically, I write by what I call the flashlight method. Rather than lining out everything, and working around that, as I write, something comes up, I think, hey, that fits in. So basically, I'm sort of with a flashlight searching through, different paths to go. And
like that, yes.
So at any rate, something happens in the news, I just relate that to something similar happened in my life and just works that way. And so you're always, rather than having a set timeline that you're working on, you can kind of search around search different ideas, and sometimes you write something and it doesn't fit, you throw it out. If you like it, you keep it. And so it's a process that, like I say, I call it the flashlight method, because I'm searching for the way to go, and it just, as it flows through my mind, I pick them out and they go with it.
I think you're onto something. I like that approach, where you sort of see what's out there, what you're feeling that day, where the story is going to go. Neil Mitchell, right. Our guest on the program, he mentioned his first book, A Stateside Tour of Duty. The book we're focusing on today is Where There Is Life, There Is Always Hope, a sequel to It's a Wonderful Life. And this is a standalone book as well. What's the story behind this book? Why did this come to mind? Of course, the 1946 classic we see every Christmas time. Why did this come to mind, and why did you two decide to do your version of the story?
That was I've always watched the Christmas time. I watched the movie, and it dawned on me, somebody ought to pick up a story at where the people go from there.
Yes.
So, and originally, I had this character who's going to be a car salesman, broke car salesman. Henry Potter leaves him his fortune. Finally, I thought, no, I don't want him to be a car salesman. So instead, he's the nephew and only surviving heir of Henry F. Potter. And he owns a ranch in Texas, and he's basically broke. He's kind of living hand-to-mouth project. He does a side job as a security guard for the local Masonite plant. And so he gets a call, or his wife does, right out of the blue. Need him to call, the senator, or not senator, a lawyer by the name of Fred Rosenberg. Of course, he comes home. His wife gives him the news. He says, oh, boy, lawyer, it's got to be bad news. But he calls the number, and the individual says, well, sir, we're sorry to tell you, but your uncle, Henry Potter, died yesterday morning. He says, oh, I never knew Uncle Henry. Mom never said anything good about him, but I guess I got to send flowers. And the lawyer says, oh, no, we need more than that. We got to assure the employees at Potter Industries that things are going to go well. So, employees? Yes, the Potter Industries is worth $31 million, and the Henry F. Potter Trust is worth $60 million. Excuse me, I think we had a problem with the phone line. He said $60 million. Of course, his wife almost drops her cup of coffee and has to steady herself to the counter. Yes, sir. And the board will be meeting tomorrow. And he said, well, it'd take me 3 days to drive New York. Never mind, sir. We're sending the company plane. So he goes from being a broke rancher. And he's in debt because his only relative, a half-brother, has recently died, and the widow has stuck him with the funeral. And his former sister-in-law is really a witch. He and his wife call her the Wicked Witch of the West, and they deal with her later, too. But at any rate, he promptly goes to New York. He says, okay, I'm a wealthy rancher from Texas, and his wife says, how did you pull that off? He said, look, I'm a rancher from Texas, and I'm the chairman of the board of the Tri-County Cattlemen's Association. She says, well, they put you on the board when one of your friends passed away, and you missed a meeting, and they elected you the chairman since you weren't there. He said, hey, still, everything I said is true. I didn't tell any lies. And so he basically bluffs his way through all of this, and it turns out he's able to rename the company from Potter Industries to the Cayuga National Corporation. He's able to make changes, make some friends, and everything goes well for him. But of course, in the background, there's these people wanting to take over. And so he's, eventually they try to do a hostile takeover.
Yes.
And of course, he's able to beat that off. Meanwhile, George Bailey, who's the protagonist in the original movie, he decides to retire from the Bailey Building and Loan, and gets his son Pete in as the new manager. And so Pete really does well. He expands the business, and he's going quite well. And the economy in the 80s, part of the 90s, was getting pretty rough. It was about half the thrifts in the country went out of business.
Oh, yes.
Of course, Pete Bailey has problems with this. And some guy shows up with a great plan and sells Pete, everybody gets Pete's buy into this. And of course, Pete thought he did his due diligence on it. But it turns out it's a Ponzi scheme. And so eventually things look like they're going to collapse. He's going to owe billions of dollars. And he's like, oh, what do we do? He goes home all depressed, and his wife says, honey, we can get through this. And of course, she's got some pills sitting on the table. She's had some problems with depression lately. Well, he's, yeah, I know they will, honey. And he leaves, and she notices he's taking her pills. So she goes into a panic, calls her mother-in-law, because George Bailey's passed away by this time. His funeral is like he's a national celebrity or something. Everybody in town shows up. But anyway, Pete drives to their summer cottage, and he's all set to take these pills. Meanwhile, Mary Bailey's called Jack down in Texas. He flies out immediately, and they go searching for him. And he's at the summer cottage as well. He's bought a bottle of bourbon, a pint of bourbon. He's drinking it. And he said, well, time to get it over with. But as he does, all of a sudden somebody appears in a room. Turns out it's his deceased father. He said, Dad, you can't be here. You've been dead, what, 20 years? No, son, I passed mortality 18 years ago, but I still exist, and it's not time for you to join me. And so he dropped the pills. So what his father does, he starts showing him different scenes of what's going to happen. And eventually he's realizes, no, I can't do this. And so he collapses on the couch, goes to sleep. Well, Mary Bailey and Jack and his family, they finally get there and find him. And, of course, his wife, Pamela, goes in, oh, why did you do this? Why? He wakes up and says, well, why did I do what? He says, well, you're alive, but you took those pills. He says, no, I accidentally spilled them on the floor. I'll pick them up. Says, no, we'll do that. And so at that point, he's telling him everything that's happened. How his father's appeared and explained that, you can't do this. You can work your way out of it. And so he's, later his wife is like, honey, I don't think you could tell people that story. They might think you're a little off. He says, hey, it really happened. Well, what to do, at that point, they go back to it's New Year's Eve. They go to the big hotel where there's a big celebration going. And they get to enjoy the the New Year's Eve celebration.
Yes.
The next day, and of course, the New Year's Day, the building and loan is closed. But his one of his assistants calls up, says, "George or Pete, I'm so sorry. Well, I left. Me and my wife had to come out here for the weekend and go skiing in Colorado. I forgot to make that last trade I was supposed to make." He says, oh, you did great. You got yourself a raise, because that turns out that's a Ponzi scheme. We don't want to be in it. And so at that point, he starts going through, and there's different means he can work with. He's a great businessman. And so literally works his way out of it, and they ultimately to become totally solvent. They get three loans from different businesses that are friends of theirs. And at the end of the story, it says, Pete... Pete retired in 2007 and paid off all the loans by that time. And he always remembered his the day back in, I think it was 1991, he says, 1991, when he and his wife celebrated the New Year's Eve with their friends and learned that wherever there's life, there's always hope. And so that's basically... I just wanted to carry on the story from 1946.
Yes.
It was jumped there. Potter dies in 1960, so there's a 14-year gap. But the story picks up there and goes on.
Well, I love that story, and I love you telling it. And the book is available wherever books are sold. Where there is life, there is always hope. Sequel to It's a Wonderful Life. Neil Mitchell is the author and our guest, N-E-I-L, Neil Mitchell. His website, neilmitchellmedia.com. Book published by Mainspring Books. Information there, mainspringbooks.com as well. I was going to ask about the title, and you summed it up nicely with the title. That really speaks to the content of the book, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I thought that was the, when you're writing a book, you always kind of think, what's the best way to title it? And you can get a bunch of ideas, and you scratch them off one by one. But that was, just, to me, that hit right on the nose. I mean, doesn't matter. What's the problem is today, you're looking at a temporary problem, and you can work through it. I've had a couple of grandchildren that unfortunately took their life. We sit around and why? What happened? What was in their mind? And, you never know, but you're disappointed that they took a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And that's in the book. Pete, initially, he's going to do that, but
yes.
he learns that that's not the way, and he changes his mind. And much like his father, in 1946, thought he had problems he couldn't overcome. And, of course, the angel, what was his name, Clarence Oddbody, shows up and shows him what would be like if he had never lived. And that would have been a disaster for the local town of Bedford Falls.
Bedford Falls, yes. It's just a remarkable continuation, putting a spin on this. Often ask the question, in fact, every Christmas time you ask the question probably, whatever happened to? Well, you've got a solution now. You've got answers. The book is where there is life, there was always hope. If you don't read the book, just remember the title because it could get you through some difficult times in your life. But read the book and you'll see it play out. A sequel to It's a Wonderful Life. Our guest is the author, Neil Mitchell, book available wherever books are sold. In all of your books, in the books we've talked about, you've got this unique blend of history, personal journey, timeless themes. What's your philosophy Yes. that guides you when you're writing? What's the philosophy that leads to the success of Neil Mitchell, the author?
My philosophy is whatever happens, you can rise above it. The one I'm trying to finish up right now, where is the glory? My ancestors, third great grandparents, Cater and Sarah Mitchell, down in Covington County, Mississippi. At the beginning of the war, they had 163 acres. They never owned any slaves ever, but they had 163 acres, a water mill, and a blacksmith shop. They were doing quite well, and they had. 9 children, including 7 sons. Well, in 1860, the Confederate government comes along, and of course they promise everybody that there's going to be lower prices, lower taxes, and more freedom for everybody except slaves. But what they got was hyperinflation, confiscatory taxes, and the first military draft in U.S. history, and 6 of their sons die. And so it obviously... Yeah, there's no glory there, but
yes.
they managed to survive. And, of course, there's actually probably hundreds of distant relatives I've got now because they're the three people that was able to continue the line wound up with, I think it's 31 children. So,
yes.
Anyway, there's a lot of us, and we're not famous, which is fine by me, but we've got a lot of people that do quite well. And so out of that disaster, there's some of us that have survived and are trying to improve the world.
Well, it's obvious your writing is influenced by your life and experiences. You use all of that, don't you, in your writing?
Yes, I do. That's, to me... I was always told that, when an older person dies, it's like a library burning down because all of their experiences are gone. And so try to incorporate as many as I can in my writing to, hopefully my kids, grandkids, and other progeny will read it and enjoy it. But it's interesting, you know, if people have to work, and you always, so you give them a book, say, please read this. Yeah, I'll get to it, Grandpa, or I'll get to it, Dad, you know, and, you know how well your motivation. I've had some of them say, well, I'm going to wait till the movie comes out, Dad.
And
I'm like, hey,
and
there's no guarantee of it.
That would be good, though. Both of these would make excellent movies. The book we're focused on, Where There Is Life, There Is Always Hope, that would be great around Christmas time. They could even do it in black and white if they wanted to continue the theme about what happened to It's a Wonderful Life. Our guest is Neil Mitchell. We've got a couple minutes left in the program. If you go to his website, neilmitchellmedia.com, you'll find information on the two books that we mentioned specifically, A Stateside Tour of Duty and this book, Where There Is Life, There Was Always Hope, information on upcoming books as well. You did a book a few years ago, I think it was 2018, The Great College Football Playoff. I love that because in 2014, they said they had this great system. Finally, we've got a playoff system in college football. It really didn't work out like they expected, but now we have one. What's your thought as someone who really studied extensively the Great College Football playoff system of 2014? What are your thoughts briefly on the playoff system that starts the end of this season?
Well, I think it's a great improvement over what they had. But what I really wanted to see was a 16-team playoff.
Yes.
In which all the conference champions, including the American, or what do they call it, the... anyway, there's the Sun Belt and another one that's
They keep changing names, and I can't remember either specifically the names, but
right.
You know, the mid-level colleges. Yes.
Realignment, but I thought all 10 of the conference champions that are in the Division I ought to be represented. At any rate, so... As it is now, there's at least one or two that's going to be in there, and I thought that's a big improvement because everyone should have a chance. As it used to be, you got two teams that'll play, and everybody decides those are the best ones. And in my book, I go through the history. I would show that a lot of times there's a lot of good teams left out. For example, there was three teams that were BCS busters that got in there. They should have had a chance to play for the championship, but none of them did. They were kind of tossed a bone. So here you go, take this and leave. And we'll watch the ones that we've decided to have for the championship, play the game. So it's been a big improvement, but I think they could improve it a little bit better.
I still can't figure out all the money when they how many millions go here and there and how they're divided up. You know, your mind gets numb after a while to all the staggering amounts of money that they're playing in college football, and that of course builds with the championship this year. It's just so interesting, but it's a good piece of history. The Great College Football Playoff. That's one of the books that Neil has written. Neil, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. You've got other books you're working on. Hopefully we'll have a chance to do this again. Love the continuation of the wonderful life story. The book is Where There Is Life, There Is Always Hope. We hope for your family's sake it becomes a movie and everybody can enjoy the story at that point. Again, we'd all love to see this at Christmas time. Congratulations on your success as a writer, second career, late in life writing, and I love the flashlight method. We all use that through our lifetime, apparently, and we never had a name for it before. Now we know we're doing the flashlight method that Neil talked about. Thank you so much for being with us on the program. Great to have you with us.
Well, you're very welcome, and thank you very much for having me. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
It has been our pleasure. Neil Mitchell, if you're Googling, that's N-E-I-L Mitchell. His website, neilmitchellmedia.com. Our thanks to mainspringbooks.com. That's their website. They're the publisher. Book available wherever books are sold, and information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.